The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code DKHOOPS. That's code DKHOOPS for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5, only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome in to NBA Pulse, a production of iHeartRadio and the NBA. I'm Sarah Kustak, NBA analyst for the YES Network, and today is Monday, April 22nd. And from our extraordinary core group of NBA journalists, we're joined now by NBA.com senior writer John Schumann. It is an excellent start to the week. For the first time, we love your power rankings so much, so this made my week. For the first time ever, you've got a playoff power rankings. Topping that list, the number one team, the Boston Celtics. Number two, Denver Nuggets. Number three, Minnesota Timberwolves. Number four, OKC. And number five, rounding out the top five, is the Los Angeles Clippers. But as always with your power rankings, you've got great, great nuggets on all teams now still in the playoffs. And you'll be doing this for each round. And the first round got underway, shoot, for the first time since 2013. In the opening game of the first round, all the home teams took care of business. I know we should never overreact to game ones, although it always feels like it's telling point sometimes throughout the course of a series, but it was fun to watch, fun to see. I know you got some nuggets on each of these games that took place. But let's begin where you were at the Garden. Number two team in the Eastern Conference, the New York Knicks, win 111-104 against the Philadelphia 76ers. As I mentioned, Shu, you were there, you saw it. What was your biggest takeaway? And I do want to ask you about the Joel Embiid factor in this one, which I don't know if there is much certainty of how we'll see that continue to play out. But what was some of your biggest takeaways in what shifted this game and could potentially impact the series for these teams?
Yeah, it was a roller coaster game in game one, with the Sixers dominating the first and third quarters and the Knicks dominating the second and the fourth. But throughout the game, I'll say this, if you look at half-court offense, like half-court execution, the Sixers win. But fast break points were 27-11 in favor of the Knicks, and second chance points were 26-8 in favor of the Knicks. And that's your game right there. I mean, we saw it last year where the Knicks dominated the glass against Cleveland, and they come in game one of the first round against a different opponent, and they dominate the glass again. They had 23 offensive rebounds. The Sixers had 24 defensive rebounds. So that tells you, like, right there, like, the Sixers just absolutely have to rebound better going forward. And you know, the Embiid experience was a roller coaster in itself. You know, I thought he played okay. And then obviously at the end of the second quarter, He has the highlight of the night, tossing the ball off the glass to himself, throwing a dunk on top of OG Anunoby. But then he lands on his left leg, the leg that he had a meniscus repair on a couple months ago. He immediately grabs that left knee and falls to the ground, goes to the locker room, and obviously for most of us think, okay, well, that's it. He's done for the night at least, and maybe possibly for the series. But amazingly, he comes back out just a couple minutes, I think, before the start of the second half, and he plays, you know, most of the second half, and he still played okay. You know, to me, it seemed like he was settling too much for jumpers, like he wasn't himself. I thought he had some good post touches. And when he did catch the ball somewhat close to the basket, I think the Sixers were in good shape. I think there was just too many of his catches came 25 feet from the basket, where he's catching the ball beyond the three-point line. And then at that point, given the sort of shape that he's in and that he's not 100%, I think it's just too much work for him to get to the basket. And so therefore he's taking a lot of jumpers, and he did not shoot well from the perimeter. I think he was 8 for 22 overall. But at the same time, now let's go back. Like, the Sixers were a plus 14 in his minutes on the floor. So even though he did settle for a bunch of jumpers, they won those minutes fairly well. And now here's the problem number two, is they were a minus 21 in less than 12 minutes with Embiid off the floor. And we've seen this in playoffs past, where the Sixers just get absolutely destroyed when he goes to the bench. And it's a big problem. And I think that's, you know, problem number two.
Yeah, in the bench. I mean, the difference in the bench between what the Knicks were able to do, and you don't always see that with a Tom Thibodeau team or a Knicks team, but how the bench contributed for the Knicks was incredible. I mean, Miles McBride, obviously, a big, big game. I think Bojan Bogdanović became that factor that you anticipated with the trade of just a veteran experience who's been in a ton of big postseason games and just in general big games, professional games throughout the course of his career. Jalen Brunson, surprisingly, did not shoot that well. But you looked at what Josh Hart did and the critical parts of that. I too think, just Philadelphia needing more from their reserves. Maxi was awesome, but the rest of the reserves and other players, what they do about that. And you mentioned it, the offensive rebounds. I mean, their first shot defense against the Knicks was solid, but the offensive rebounds, the Knicks just absolutely commanded them, and the turnovers were such an issue, allowing the Knicks to have so many runouts. So, it's going to be interesting to watch. And one, the health of Joel Embiid, but two, just how both teams kind of settle into things. And if there's anything, Nick Nurse, we talked a lot about that change and that shift in that head coaching position, how much he can factor in as the series continues on. The late game on Saturday night was the Denver Nuggets, the Los Angeles Lakers. There was a lot of looking at this series and the Lakers winning that first play-in game of just it being a tough matchup to have to face the Denver Nuggets. And Gru, are we calling Joker Gru now? Did you see this shoe? Did you see the whole Despicable Me? I'm not entirely familiar with all the things that are happening in that framework. But Nikola Jokic was just tremendous, as were the Nuggets. 114-103 was the final score. I'm not sure if that was really indicative of the way the game went. LeBron James and Anthony Davis, you couldn't really have asked much more out of them. But complimentary pieces just weren't necessarily there, and this looks like it's just going to be a tough go for the Lakers.
They've now lost their last 9 games against the Nuggets when you include the sweep in the Western Conference Finals last year. My number for this one is that the Nuggets have averaged 58.5 points in the paint on 61.3% shooting over their 4 games against the Lakers this year. Both of those are the highest mark for any Western Conference opponent against the Lakers this season. The Lakers, Anthony Davis is a Defensive Player of the Year candidate. You know, he is one of the best interior defenders in the league. He is big and bouncy and timely. He's among the leaders in blocks, blocks per 36 minutes. But in the regular season, the Lakers allowed 126 points per 100 possessions against the Nuggets when Davis was on the floor. That's a very high number. And it was his highest sort of on-court number against any opponent, Western or Eastern Conference, in the regular season. And it was even higher in game one of this series. So it's not only, that the Nuggets just have the Lakers number, but they dominate the Lakers where the Lakers are used to dominating themselves, which is inside, right? Like the Nuggets are, the Lakers are usually, they were, I think, last in the league in 3-point differential, meaning that their opponents made a lot more threes than they did. And so they win inside and with defense, and the Nuggets are the opponent that were sort of 3-point shooting means the least, and an opponent that can dominate the Lakers inside.
That's fascinating. That's really fascinating. To that point, the Nuggets were able to balance that as well, of still winning the battle at the 3-point line and knocking down a good amount from deep, something that the Lakers weren't necessarily able to do. And other than getting to the free throw line more, it really was Denver in a lot of those spots. What about the Suns and Timberwolves game? Minnesota 120-95 win. It was commanding. And this is after seeing the Suns just take care of this Minnesota team throughout the course of the regular season. So I don't know if this necessarily should come as a surprise, but I will say, to me, that decisive of a win, the personality of Anthony Edwards just all over the place, in just how he was able to be such an incredible version of himself. And then the Timberwolves defense looking tremendous against a Suns team that showed up how we've seen them show up in some moments throughout the course of the season, just trying to put the pieces together. What did you take away from this one?
Yeah, I think, even though home teams were 8-0, there were a couple of games that were surprises. This was one of them, especially the fact that the Wolves won by 25. But the kind of amazing thing is that they won by 25, even though their starting lineup was outscored by 8 points in its 14 minutes together on the floor. So that means they were a plus 33 in about 34 minutes with at least one reserve on the floor. Now, that includes a little bit of garbage time. Like, I think they were plus 3 in garbage time, basically, when like the third stringer guys were on the floor. But that, obviously, that's a huge performance. Like going back to the Knicks, that's a huge performance from the Wolves bench. And we know that Naz Reid is a sixth man of the year finalist, but I think that's sort of one underrated part of the Wolves season this year, is that they had, like, if you aggregate, how well they play with reserves on the floor, they had the second ranked bench in the league, behind only that of the Celtics, who are obviously the best team in the league statistically by a wide margin. And the Suns bench actually ranked 18th. So I don't think we don't think starters versus reserves necessarily in this series, but I think the bench is a huge advantage for Minnesota.
Yeah. And even saying that, like, Naz Reid, you mentioned Nikhil Alexander-Walker, who Chris Finch had when he was an assistant in New Orleans at the early part of his career. But for him to come away with 18 points, go 7-12 from the field. Yeah, there's also just a lot of players, even the numbers didn't show it, but whether you're popping in, a Kyle Anderson that have been around, or they've just been around playoff basketball. The earlier game of the day, the Orlando Magic and Cleveland Cavaliers. I do think this was another one, at least for me, I was very intrigued to see what would happen. And again, the lack of overreaction for game one is something that I think we're always reminded of. But the Cleveland Cavaliers just looked ready to go, and they dominated. Orlando Magic looked like that young, youthful team that had not been there before. 97-83 win by the Cavs there at home. What stood out to you in this one?
Well, I mean, I think we knew before the series started that it would be the ugliest offensive series of the eight, right? Just because it's two good defensive teams and two not so great offensive teams. So the number for me, like the Magic shot 18 for 40, which is 45% in the paint. Now, what's crazy is that four teams actually shot worse than that in these eight game ones in the paint. The league average is 57% in the paint. So if you're shooting less than 50, that's pretty bad. And number one, that's a credit to Cleveland's defense. I mean, they have Evan Mobley and Jared Allen in the middle. And yes, teams are going to shoot poorly in the paint against them. You could say the same thing about the Magic. They're a great paint defense as well. But I think that the thing with me is that, you know, we know that the Magic are a poor perimeter shooting team. They were 27th in mid-range field goal percentage. They were 24th in three-point percentage. They were 25th in three-point rate, you know, the percentage of their shots that came from three-point range. So if they can't finish in the paint as well, then they're in real trouble. You know, so they've got to find some offense somehow. And, you know, they've got to get Paolo Banchero and Franz Wagner downhill somehow. They've got to be able to force some more turnovers so they can get some transition buckets. Because if they're in the half court and they're, you know, unable to sort of, you know, we know they're a bad shooting team from the outside. You know, they've got to find ways to score inside and score more efficiently inside. So 45% in the shooting in the paint is just not going to cut it.
No, and it just felt like, though, there was no room. Like, anytime they tried to do any, to your point about no outside shooting, there was nowhere to go. And you're looking at Evan Mobley and Jared Allen. Offensively, was a big night for Donovan Mitchell. I felt like he was able to take over in those areas. And for the Magic, guys that they have at some moments relied upon to knock down some three-point shots or at least provide a little bit of the offensive punch or push, like Cole Anthony off the bench, really struggled, couldn't hit a shot. Nor a three. It was Jalen Suggs had been a little bit better throughout the course of the season shooting threes. And for him, it was a big struggle. Gary Harris. So some of those players that at moments, it's like if they can hit, then at least it will spread things out a little bit, just could not do that.
Yeah, and it's a good point about Mitchell. I mean, he had a very subpar sort of post All-Star break where he missed, I think, 19 games and then shot poorly over the ones he played. I think he shot a little bit better over the last couple of games that he played in. But for him to have as much bounce as he seemed to have in game one and score 30 points, I mean, that's a huge, huge development, I think, for the Cavs, like, because it was a real struggle for the most part down the stretch. And he has now scored 30 points or more in 21 of his 45 playoff games, which is pretty amazing.
Wow.
Like
that
if
is.
I was at MSG the other day and I asked the person sitting next to me, it's like, how many playoff games do you think Donovan Mitchell has scored at least 30 points in his career? And they were like, I don't know, 11, 12. And I was like, no, it's 21. Like, that's a huge, that's amazing. He is a playoff performer. I'll say
that's
that.
That's what you want to see and you need. All right, we're going to take a quick break and come back with all of the games taking place yesterday.
The NBA playoffs are heating up and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. With same game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more, don't miss out as the NBA postseason winds down. And if you're new to DraftKings, you got to check this out. New customers bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets instantly. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code DKHOOPS. That's code DKHOOPS for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Welcome back to NBA Pulse. Sarah Kustak joined by the great John Schumann, and we had a fun Sunday. Let's start with the nail biter down the stretch. The Oklahoma City Thunder beating the Pelicans 94-92. CJ McCollum in the Pels with a shot to potentially win it at the end. What'd you take away from this one?
Yeah, let's talk about the end. I mean, the Pelicans were 3-for-11. Including 1-for-6 on clutch shots. Clutch shots being any of the shots that they took with the score within 5 in the last 5 minutes. It came down to that. You know, they were, the low seed that had the best shot of winning. McCollum's 3-pointer was, within the cylinder. It hit off the heel of the rim. But if that goes in, it's obviously, there's a huge difference between being up 1-0 and being down 1-0. But it ties back to the regular season. The Pelicans ranked 26th in clutch offense, 101.5 points per 100 clutch possessions. That's bad. They were 14-15 in games that were within 5 points in the last 5 minutes. That's not good. But it tells you, though, that this is, statistically, this is much better than an 8 seed. I mean, the Pelicans were 49-33 in the regular season, but they had the point differential, the fourth best point differential in the Western Conference of a team that was 54-28, right? So they, statistically, they were a better team than their record said, but because they struggled in close games, they finish in the play-in, and then they get the 8th seed, and, obviously in a tough spot, especially without Zion Williamson.
Yeah, and just the point of, game ones, how that can impact for protecting your home court for a Thunder team that early on looked like they were getting their first taste, and it may be taking a while. That difference of coming away with a win obviously could and very much be significant in how the rest of things play out. The Milwaukee Bucks took care of home court without Giannis Antetokounmpo. It was Dame time, 35 points for him and Chris Middleton. Those are the two factors of the guys that you need to really perform, and they certainly did. Middleton with 23-10, and on the side of the Pacers, short of Pascal Siakam, which they brought him there for, and he had a big one, 36-13. The Pacers just did not have it. 109-94 Milwaukee win. What about that game?
Yeah, I think the headline, especially after halftime, was Damian Lillard, but really, if you look at it, the story is the other end of the floor. I mean, the Pacers had the second ranked offense in the league this season. The Bucks were not a very good defensive team. It's basically their, worst defensive team in the last 5 or 6 years. But in this game, it was the second time all season that the Pacers scored less than a point per possession. And the first time was November 1st, their fourth game of the season. So they have not been this bad offensively in basically 5.5 months. And the one thing that stood out to me is Tyrese Haliburton. He had a usage rate of 11.4%, which is basically the percentage of possessions that he ends with a field goal attempt or a trip to the line or a turnover. And that 11.4% was his lowest usage rate in 151 career games with the Pacers. Wow. So basically, Tyrese Haliburton was as little of a factor in this game as he's been in any game that he's played with the Indiana Pacers. And so, yeah, I think credit to the Bucks, number one, but two, going forward into game two, the Pacers need to figure a way to sort of unlock their star point guard.
Yeah, no doubt. You cut off the head of the snake and it changes everything. Clippers, Dallas Mavericks, a resounding win at home for the Clippers, and a very excited Steve Ballmer that you saw throughout the course of the game, 109-97. Kawhi Leonard did not play, but it was probably one of the worst first halves we've seen out of the Dallas Mavericks. And they're obviously dealing with a lot. Derek Lively, the second hit, lost his mother. They had the funeral this week. And there's a lot happening that I do think in some regards you take into context. But yeah, it was just a very, very tough start for the Mavericks. Got down big and just didn't feel like it was really going to be their day. What do you take away from this one?
Yeah, we mentioned the Magic shooting in the paint. The Mavs were one of those teams that shot worse than the Magic in the paint. They were 16 for 38 in the paint in this game. And you mentioned the first half. They scored 30 points on 48 possessions in the first half. That was the fifth least efficient half for any team in any game this season. And that, if you count like all the games, all the halves, and all in two teams in each half, that's 4,972 total halves of basketball. Ooh. And this was the fifth least efficient offensive performance in any half for any game in any game this season. So, if you go back to it, the Mavs were, you know, cruising, going into the end of the season. They went 16-2 down the stretch. And then the last two games, you know, this Clippers-Mavs matchup was locked in. The last two games, they rested Kyrie Irving and Luka Doncic. They sort of took their foot off the gas. And it's like they couldn't get the bus moving again until the second
half of
game one.
Cars not starting quite as quickly.
Yeah. So, but their second half was remarkably efficient. Now, I'm sure the Clippers took their foot off the gas a little bit, especially, you know, defensively. So who knows if we'll have any carryover from the second half of game one to the first half of game two. If there is, that's great for the Mavs, because, you know, they still have a chance to steal home court advantage. I think this was the I talked about, you know, how there were still some surprising results, even though the home team won all eight games. And I guess this probably just in the result was probably the most surprising, because Kawhi Leonard was out for the Clippers and because the Mavs had been playing so well over the last 5 or 6 weeks.
Yeah. And you said it, though, sometimes just restarting that in, rather than, you know, the last thing you want to do is be easing into a playoff. But it looked that way. And James Harden, we've seen him have, even last year with Philadelphia, really big. Joel Embiid wasn't playing a really big game one. He had another one of that. Vitsa Zubats was incredible. And Daniel Gafford, who had been so good after that trade, just didn't have it. So this is likely going to be a tighter series than what we saw out of that game, but that was a commanding win for the Clippers out of the gate. The last game that we are getting to, the Boston Celtics, a 114-94 win against the Miami Heat. Miami Heat playing without Jimmy Butler is obviously a very, very big factor in the Celtics. Your number one team in your playoff power rankings certainly looked like it.
Yeah, so my number for this one is that the Celtics scored 24 points in the paint. That was their lowest total of the last two seasons and tied for the third fewest for a winning team in any game this season. 24 points in the paint is not a lot, but they were 22 for 49, 45% from three-point range. Those 49 attempts, they only attempted 82 field goals total. So 49 out of 82 is 60%. So they took 60% of their shots from three-point range. Now, like, you know, it's not, I don't want to say that this, you know, the Celtics are dependent on the three, because they're not. You know, they take, first of all, they take good three pointers. They have just, you know, the best drive and kick game in the league. And the other thing is they had the best record in the league when not shooting, when shooting below the league average from 3-point range, right? That's one of the things I like to sort of look at, is how a team shoots when it shoots the league average or better from three versus when it doesn't shoot the league average for better three. And the Celtics had the best record in both cases, right? They had the best record when they shot well from deep. They had the best record when they didn't shoot well from deep. So, and it's, and part of that is they have a great defense as well, right? So they can survive a not so great shooting night because they're elite defensively, but also just because they can get to the line, they can get to, you know, the free throw line, they can get to the paint if they need to. So yeah, I'll be curious. The Heat did not play a lot of zone in this game. I think probably because it was such a blowout early. I mean, they were down 14-0. That maybe they didn't want to sort of waste, you know, the zone on a game that was, you know, probably going to be impossible to win anyway. So we'll see if there's more zone. I think the Celtics, there was, I want to say, 7 or 8, 9 possessions of zone, and the Celtics did pretty well against it. But we saw a lot of zone in this series in the conference finals last year, and the Celtics were terrible against it, like really, really bad against the zone in the conference finals last year. So I assume we're going to see more of it. I don't know if that's going to help much. I think this is obviously a big mismatch with Jimmy Butler out and just how good the Celtics were this season. And obviously they also have Kristaps Porzingis, and there's nobody in the league who's better at shooting over top of a zone than that guy.
Yeah, that it certainly makes it tough to put up any type of a contest. Shu, as always, we appreciate you. We appreciate your time and checking out your first ever playoff power rankings. All the good stuff on all these teams and all these series is certainly helpful as we continue to watch these play out. Until next time, we'll see you soon.
All right, Sarah, thanks.
NBA Pulse with Sarah Kustak is a production of the NBA and iHeartRadio. Please rate, review, and subscribe on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.